out of the way, please. Nope. Whatever.
All right, you wanted to start this thing off. We're leaving the floor to you.
No, you do the intros.
Well, you said you had something you wanted to open with. I thought that's what we were doing.
No, a topic.
Oh, a topic. You didn't say that. Okay, well, we're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Jay, joined by Christopher, Dan, and Christian. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys. Another classic intro.
I got it right this time.
I'm just staring at the ceiling in hatred.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about.
All right, Chris, go ahead.
Well, okay. So we're going to talk about the Gary Con a lot this episode, for sure. And I wanted to transition into our talk about Gary Con and kind of like my overall feelings of it. And I do apologize ahead of time if I sniffle or cough at all. I no longer under the weather, but still have stuffy everything.
Concred, yep.
Yeah, the concred, man, that kicked my ass. Like, I was feeling it on the way home on Sunday night. And then Monday, I just slept all day. Tuesday, I tried to work, but I passed out. Wednesday, I slept all day. Thursday, I tried to work, but passed out. I was okay Friday and Saturday, but anyways. The con was an absolute blast. And I was thinking about it a lot while lying in bed, not doing much. And I was also reading articles and mostly about just how Hasbro has been just
the best.
Fucking Buy everything Hasbro up. Right. So it comes down to this. There, in my mind, there is a Gary Con versus Hasbro happening. Okay. And what I mean by that is D&D is like the all-encompassing umbrella that is tabletop gaming and our passion for creating worlds and stuff like that. And I don't think it will ever change namesakes for generations from now. People will always be calling, hey, you want to play D&D? Sure, what you playing? Shadow Dark. I think it's just like Soda has 1,000 different names. I think D&D is kind of...
Yeah, if you're in the South, you better be ordering a Coke. If you're up north, it's a pop.
Ugh,
pop. So you say that, but I grew up north, and I do have a story about that where I was working at McDonald's, and the kid asked me for a pop, and I just thought he wanted me to punch him in the face until he said,
"Why would you ever think anybody would actually want that to happen?" Labels.
I was very confused. I was young and impressionable, and it was a child just asking me for a pop, and. You know, pop to me was either my grandfather or something you did to somebody else with your fist. So that was the only two definitions that I knew. Or and balloons exploding. But anyways, I was reading a couple articles and I came across one article that was interesting to me, published by Rascal News. And they interviewed one of the people that were let go from the virtual tabletop disaster, the Sigil disaster and rollout that happened.
Yeah, didn't that happen like the day we flew into Milwaukee to head to Gary Con?
I think so, yeah. Well, the rollout...
Yeah, or like the day before, yeah.
Yeah.
But basically right when we left to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out from this employee, their behind-the-scenes knowledge was that the executives thought that Sigil was going to be a video game that would rival Baldur's Gate 3.
What?
Yes. They were thinking that they were throwing money at a video game that was going to, like, revolutionize tabletop. Okay? Not that it was a virtual tabletop. And
they understood it to be like a live service D&D video game.
Right.
So that it would continually bring in revenue.
And essentially, once they figured out that it wasn't that, it wasn't the next big video game, and it was a virtual tabletop, the way we all understand virtual tabletops to be, is when they axed the product completely. And that's why we got the bullshit rollout. That's why everyone got laid off a couple days later. They do not want to keep that running. They don't see their idea.
Almost like they just figured out what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They basically just figured out what was going on, what the product really was. And they basically just jump shipped immediately, which I don't think is fair for Sigil. You can talk about all the problems with it being Unreal 5 and needing a more powerful PC than you need to play Baldur's Gate 3 for it to run effectively. You know, there are things that definitely need to be smoothed out and fixed before a real release should have happened. But the fact that the executives didn't even understand the product that they were funding and pushing out makes me believe that they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. Well, and the article...
Can I weigh in a little bit here? Have you read any of that book that you put stuck with you on the flight, Play Nice, yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. For those of you that are not familiar with it, it's a recent book by Jason Schreier about the rise, fall, and future of Blizzard Entertainment. And WotC has found themselves in the Hasbro sphere and a bunch of executives that don't understand the game that they are in control of effectively. And what's interesting to me is that this same sort of thing happened with Blizzard, with a bunch of executives that don't know what the fuck it is that they have, and they feel like that they need to implement some things that are just going to get the, just going to really just print the money, and that if you had a banner year last year, you're going to go up another 50% the next year, another 50% the following year, and that, you know, whenever the game designers explain these things to the executives, they act like they understand what it is, but they don't. And it's a weird situation because we're also, we also recently at Gary Con turned onto a great podcast called When We Were Wizards. And this is the same sort of thing going in the opposite direction from back when the Blooms and Gygax and Don K founded TSR, and then they didn't know fuck all about business. So, of course, we all know how that all turned out whenever business got the upper hand on the creators and TSR just became a money printing machine until they fucking weren't whenever WotC took over. And it's a hard thing to have kind of the I guess the balance between executives that know what they're doing, both as a business as well as understand what their creators are up to and doing. And it's always been that way with gaming, always. Hell, it's always been that way with D&D. It's not just limited to D&D though, it's computer gaming. This kind of shit happened at White Wolf. Like, have you guys heard about the White Wolf online that was in production for 10 fucking years and then they just closed the doors? They never released it. Like, same shit happened there. Like, it's the same sort of thing. Like, you'll get an investor group that's going to throw a whole bunch of money at something because they saw that, you know, Vampire the Masquerade was really big last year, or D&D made a lot of money last year. Let's just keep on pushing out products until we can't push out products anymore. These people just want to get in, make money, and get out. That's really that's all they're into at the end of the day. And you're right. You know, it's probably not the people who were creating Sigil's fault. They were trying to create something that people wanted, but then they just basically got that shit flushed on them, which sucks.
It really does.
Go ahead, Christian.
Let me elucidate with a few things I've learned, and I'm going to I'm not trying to quote directly because I listened to this video by Stephen Glicker a few days ago, so I'm going off of memory here, and then a couple other pieces from other news sources, but. Let me start with before that. One of the things that in one of the interviews I watched with Mike Merles that he mentioned is that when they were creating 5e, that because it's before D&D had really come to the attention of executives at the Hasbro level, there was no real layers of bureaucracy as far as what they could do. So they just kind of made the decisions, and Mike and a couple of the other guys that were actually creating it were the ones that made the decisions of what it would be. And they didn't really have to get anyone's approval. They were just able to create a game.
Nice.
But they can't do that anymore. Everything, like for Vivi, they have, now he's talking about like, when it started to go up different stuff, there's multiple layers of bureaucracy and executives they have to go through before anything can be approved. And so it's gotten to this. It sounds like hell because it is.
Absolutely.
That has resulted in some of the, I think, kind of generic stuff we've seen. They've become risk averse because everything has to be floated through executives and has to be explained to executives that are not people that play D&D or even understand anything about the game. So you have to talk it in a simple way. And as a result, so much of the stuff has become generic. So I watched a video from Steven Glicker, and he talked about, he has talked to some people behind the scenes and stuff, some of the people that he had access to this letter that had sent out apparently early, but he wanted to verify it.
Yeah.
He wanted to verify it. He couldn't find any other sources in time. So he didn't want to say anything because one source does not, you know, truth make. But he mentioned
some
things.
Media doesn't agree with that.
Yeah, I know. But he mentioned some things of that. With this thing with Sigil coming out, there's other things that Hasbro is now pulling back on D&D a little bit. They were trying to make it into the next $1 billion brand. So they figured they were going to pump money and pump things in, and they were going to turn D&D into, you know, they wanted it at the same earnings level as Magic the Gathering.
And that was going to be my next point.
This is going to affect you, though, Chris. He did mention one of the things he'll like is he says they're going to end Adventurers League.
It's completely. Already ended.
Yeah, like they haven't done anything with it in 2 years.
Yeah, it's been unsupported
now.
For, what, 2 years? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and having talked to, what was her name? The Shadow Dark Lady.
Oh, Kelsey Dion.
Kelsey, yeah. I was going to say Kelser, but that wasn't, not her name. Yeah, speaking to her and how she's trying to build, you know, an Adventures League for Shadow Dark, I got a lot of information about that. Like, I really hope I can sync up with her, you know, just to tell her, like, this is what I thought worked, just to tell her, like, my side of things. But, Adventures League, before I jump in, I don't want to jump into that again, because I have jumped into that so much. Yeah. I do want to say that Hasbro right now is being propped up by Magic the Gathering. Yep. And Magic the Gathering works because they have a very fast cycle. They pump out tons and tons of products, and people are still just eating it up. Final Fantasy comes out in 2 months.
They're going to double down on Magic. Because
Final Fantasy comes out in 2 months. SpongeBob comes out in a month. SpongeBob came out over GaryCon.
Did SpongeBob sell anything, or... SpongeBob
sold out negative 30 minutes before it went live.
Oh my god. My money is on that one specifically. That's people who are buying it to try to resell it later on down the road.
I mean, that's just Magic in general, dude.
Probably, but
does Watsy care?
No, Watsy doesn't care, yeah.
They care that people buy it, and if it sells out, that looks good, and that just tells them to keep doing more of that.
Yeah. Yep. And that's the issue, is that they wanted Magic the Gathering is not being touched by the executives because it's making them so much money. So they tried to fix D&D to make it more money. And that's just not how that works. And like, D&D will make a lot of money. You can go out there, you can monetize the shit out of it. The Mr. Potato Head Beholder, I think, it's kind of jumping the shark. So, like, stop right there. Like, don't go any further down the rabbit
hole. That's not what they're going to do, because they've decided.
I know.
They've decided, and this comes more from that scene, that they decided that, okay, they're going to approach D&D as a brand. They're not going to stop making books. They're still going to do their, you know, six to eight book releases a year of the regular books. But they're going to stop looking at that side of D&D as, like, the thing that brings in money. And they're going to look for the way that they've done with Magic, with Universes Beyond. They're going to look for those opportunities with D&D, with other products. What other products can they slap a D&D brand on? Like rides at theme parks and pinball machines and other stuff like that they're going to try to slap D&D branding on in order to expand the brand that way. And then the
I don't mind a lot of that.
The design team is going to go back into the shadows and just be kind of, hopefully it might be good for them, because if they're not expected to like make billions of dollars based off D&D books, maybe they can start to do things they want, because maybe everyone will just stop looking at them, and that might be good.
Yeah. So I talk about all this thing that this whole rant we just all had about Hasbro to make me go back to my original point of Gary Con versus Hasbro. After going to Gary Con, I think tabletop is in such a great place right now. I have been wishy-washy about it in podcasts in the past, where I think there's too many systems out there, too many crazy people, not enough people taking risks, and they're just kind of like making their own system and throwing it out there and seeing if it sticks. But having gone out there and met so many of the creators, you know, meeting the guy behind Pirate Borg, meeting the lady behind Shadow Dark, meeting the guys behind Keshinar, I think there's enough people out there with enough funds, with enough passion to actually create a lot of really good systems. And they're going to brawl out there in the capitalist world for everyone's attention. I don't know who's going to win. I hope it's all of them.
I don't think there has to be a winner. Obviously, some
won't
survive. But if you put out a hell of a good product like Pirate Borg, like Shadow Dark, like Mothership, these systems are going to survive for a long time.
Yeah.
So something that I think both Kelsey and Luke, creators respectively of Shadow Dark and Pirate Borg, kind of talked about, Kelsey especially in her What's New with Shadow Dark on Wednesday when we showed up to that, is they're not looking for investment opportunities from outside people.
Right.
They're not looking to get corporatized. Kelsey has complete control of her product.
Yep.
Luke has the same. Like, he is basically using the rules from Morkborg, which is just a really rules light system created for a death metal post-apocalyptic adventure, which is super metal, by the way. And if you want to get the Pirate Borg mixtape, you can literally get a tape of it on his website right now. But like, neither of them are using Amazon, which is like the first thing, the first ding ding ding. Like, they don't have a fucking middleman. And right. Like, when Kelsey was talking about, you know, selling to local game stores, she specifically, like, somebody came up, it's like, well, what if we want to order a whole bunch of product? We're ordering, like, some stuff from Chaosium and ordering some stuff from WotC, but we also want to order some stuff from the Arcane Library, and we order it through this one company that does all the ordering for us, blah, blah, blah. It's like, and she just basically flat out said, yeah, but we want to have a direct, you know, investment in your game store, and we'll sell directly to you, and it'll be cheaper. And the guy was like, well, basically, I'm lazy and just want to place my order through the same place I've always done it. And this is the way we've always done it. It's like, everyone's losing money that way. And but it's clear, both Luke and Kelsey have their shit on their website, and they sell it mail order. And it works fine. And they're still obviously going to get into some of the bigger game stores in the bigger cities and stuff like that. But it'll take time to do that. And they're definitely showing up and being very popular at conventions, obviously. So, you know, good on them, and they've clearly seemed to have learned the mistakes of the past game companies.
Well, yeah, let's hope so.
Awesome. So far, at least.
Yeah.
Well, they've also, and Kelsey was clear when she did this Kickstarter that this was kind of her, she was looking at this as kind of a referendum on Shadow Dark. Is Shadow Dark a one-hit wonder, or is it something that I can keep doing for this foreseeable future?
Right.
And both her and Luke, the creator of Pirate Borg, have both been big on, we want to support third-party creators for our stuff, and not just like so they can like make a cool thing here and there. Like, they both think that we want people to be able to make a living off of building products for our systems. So they can do the same thing that we do, which is make a living off of our games, and we would love to provide that opportunity to third-party creators.
I mean, people,
that, I think, is key and awesome, because that gets you more products out there that you don't have to do yourself, and more people interested.
People have been doing that with 5e for a long time, or even third edition, like, you know, because with the open gaming license, you had so many things for third edition onward where people are just making out of that system. They're just using the system, building their own shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, yeah. And just to continue on that, like Luke's most recent Kickstarter, there's a book that is called Cabin Fever. And it's our first release from Known Conspirators, our sublabel for community content for over a dozen creative teams. It's a 180-page full-color book, hardcover, soft touch, blah, blah, blah. And like all the illustrations, or most of the illustrations are done by Luke and some other collaborative creators, but like it's all third-party stuff that he's specifically like accepting people to, you know, he's publishing it on their behalf, but he's also allowing other people to publish their own adventures too. It's, mm-hmm. you know, because it's just the same sort of thing. Like, if more people play the game, they're going to buy your book, so there's no reason not to have third-party people, you know, publish adventures for your game.
Yeah, Mothership does the same thing. They did a big thing this January where they called it Mothership Month, and they released a new book for Mothership, but they also sponsored a whole bunch of third-party creators and supported them. Like, they back the backer kit campaigns and Kickstarters of their own third-party creators to help them. Mm-hmm. And they also advertised them and did this whole thing where, like, hey, and they did a thing through backer kit, which was kind of neat, where, like, hey, if you back a certain number of these, like, we'll give you, like, extra stuff, like cool little patches and stickers and things to mm-hmm. support you to back not just ours, but all these third parties. We want you to support them, too.
Yeah, I'm seeing constantly Goodman. I get updates from Goodman Games, and you know, there'll be a Kickstarter that pops up that is not theirs that they are backing. And I see it like every other week. There's something for them.
Yeah, same thing. Goodman does a great job of that. They back the stuff, and then they tell other people. They tell their channel of, you know, their followers and supporters to say, "Hey, this other guy's running this DCC or MCC adventure. You guys should go check it out and back it."
Yeah, and I gotta say, Goodman Games was fucking killing it at the con. I mean, one, they had the booth right as you entered the exhibition hall.
Oh yeah, they paid extra for that one.
I'm sure they did.
Prime real estate.
I think it was well worth it. They got a lot of money out of me. I know they sold out of, I want to say all of the Gong Farmer stuff they had, like sold every fucking thing.
Which is all third party stuff. Again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a damn word. It just goes to show that I was wrong about my worry that I had 6 months ago when Critical Role had their system coming out and Cobalt Press had their system coming out and Shadow Dark was hitting the scenes. I was worried that there'd be too much bloat and it wouldn't be enough of everything, but I can say now that after seeing the people at GaryCon, seeing the creators and the publishers that are there, that the system, the people will do fine with this, as many systems that are out there. And, you know, I hope that, you know, everyone is successful in what they do. And when it comes down to it, you know, $30 for a book is not that expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for most people, you know, for Shadow Dark, you know, and you're not beholden to buy everything that comes out. Like I kind of feel like I am for D&D. I'll still be buying the D&D books. I still enjoy them and everything. I just don't enjoy 2024 as much as I was hoping I would. And I'd rather move on to Shadow Dark or Pirate Borg at the end of the day.
Yeah, conveniently, there's more than enough systems out there. Like, you know, we tend to play D&D a lot of us do primarily, and it's because we get to play once a week, maybe twice a week if you're lucky, you know, some of us every couple of weeks. So there's not a lot of time, and we tend to be around players who play D&D. Yeah, so it's just kind of easier to play that system.
Yeah.
But just having gone to GaryCon, I mean, none of us played we didn't play 5e D&D at least. We played everything else, and there was no shortage for games that we were able to get into.
Yeah. And D&D will be fine. I went into, when you guys were off gallivanting around doing something or other, I snuck my way into
gallivant, sir.
I saw your shirt. Yes, you do.
Maybe I do.
I snuck into the Adventure League room.
How dare you?
I know. And I talked with a couple of people that were there running Adventures League, and they said their communities are pretty strong, although it's basically just being held up by their own will. And I got information on, you know, who's actually out there making content for Adventures League, and it's not D&D. It's just the players holding it alive for as long as they want. So, unfortunately, I don't think Hasbro WotC is doing the right thing with getting rid of Adventures League, and not as long as they're, if they're getting rid of it and not replacing it with something else, that's the wrong thing. They need to replace it with something else, and they should, because okay,
fine.
Good.
You're gonna have Shadowdark's version of it, so it'll be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's fine because Encounters became Adventures League. Adventures League will become something else.
Didn't they already say there was some sort of Greyhawk-based thing they were trying to start up that's kind of sort of replacing Adventures League? I thought I read that somewhere.
Maybe.
I could have sworn I heard something about that, but
yeah, it was like a Magic Fest or something like that in Chicago.
Is Living Greyhawk back again?
Probably.
Living Greyhawk.
Remember Living Greyhawk? Like, yeah. I think it came up during 3rd edition. And they keep trying to, like, it seems like, bring it back where they're going to do, like, oh, yeah, we're gonna sponsor, everything will be Greyhawk, and we'll do this Living Greyhawk world as sort of right. like Adventures League. But then they tend to announce it, do a couple of things, and then forget that it exists.
Nobody wants to play Greyhawk.
Consistently for each edition.
They better get used to it. It's the new setting.
Hey, shut your fucking mouth. I want to play Greyhawk.
Currently the only D&D 2024 setting.
So... here we go. Magic is in December 2nd, 2024, on the D&D Beyond page. It said, MagicCon Chicago and the Legends of Greyhawk. For the first time, Dungeons & Dragons will be featured at MagicCon. We're excited to bring awesome D&D experience. Blah, 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 blah. Legends of Greyhawk preview. Things to know. So essentially, it's for campaign play. And it's questions. The Q&A is... is Legends of Greyhawk part of Adventures League? No, it's a separate campaign with separate rules that takes inspiration from past and current organized play campaigns, however. What in-game year will be the year? Blah, blah, blah. You can create adventures, approve convention, organize. It basically, it sounds like it's just for conventions and not for local gaming stores.
Yeah.
So basically, rather than doing Adventures League at conventions, they'll be doing Legends of Greyhawk.
Kind of like
RPG. Like all pre the disaster of Sigil. I was told too that one of the things that was the nail in the coffin for Sigil's when they tried to do that big, they did the live play that had some of the Baldur's Gate 3 voice actors.
Yeah.
And the first half of it was non-Sigil, just guys, just them playing D&D, and it was super entertaining, and like they were just getting into it and being in character and being good entertainers, like they all are, like good actors and entertainers. And then as soon as they put everyone in front of a computer screen, like where you had to stare and interact with the thing, and everything took longer, the system was laggy, it kept crashing, and it didn't work. And then like the energy visibly dropped, and it like people weren't laughing and having a good time. Like it was a disaster. Mm. And I also saw that there's some people that like, so they demoed Sigil to a bunch of people, like even people like Professor Dungeon Master and Steven Glicker and other people a year and a half ago. And some of those people have looked at it again a year and a half now that it was released, and they said all the same bugs and problems they still had with it a year and a half ago are still there. Like basically it hasn't changed in a year and a half development time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's not ideal. Not ideal. Yeah. Throwing millions of dollars at something and literally no updates, I wouldn't be surprised that they canned it.
Yeah. Well, that's my rant about Gary Gunn versus Hasbro. I want to take a moment real quick, and for the first time ever, I'm going to ask you, if you're listening to this, please like us and subscribe. I'm going to start shilling that now.
Like, subscribe.
Please like comment, and subscribe. Facebook.
Yeah, if you'd like to hear more of this, let us know, and we'll.
Yeah, if you want to hear Chris ranting about Hasbro, that's just
tune in every week.
Yeah.
Well, I won't be ranting more about Hasbro. I'm sure in a couple of weeks I'll be ranting about Pirate Borg.
Well, you already did that.
Yeah,
to that live creator, I did. Yeah,
Yeah, to the creator.
Do we want to go around and give everybody let everyone give their couple of highlights from GaryCon?
I would love to. I would love for all of us to basically talk about GaryCon and what it meant to us, where it touched us deep down inside, and give us in the cockles.
It'll be weird.
I'm making it weird. I want you guys to basically tell me what your favorite thing was at GaryCon that you guys did, someone you met as well, something. And someone that you met too that you want to just give a shout out to.
I'll start.
You start always.
Yeah, I generally seem to. Apparently, there were several things that I really enjoyed about GaryCon, and I will get to very specifics of my favorites. But one, I love that when you walk into the lobby, there's just two of the pinball machines, the brand new ones, sitting right there.
And then two more of them right up the stairs.
That are free to play the entire weekend. And did we ever play them?
I am putting together a video of us playing it. I'm just going to see what I can do with my poor video editing skills. And you will see the tournament that we had and see who the reigning pinball champion is for the Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Yep, no spoilers here. But watch the video when it comes out. Let's see. Meeting Kelsey Dion was nice. Got to talk to her briefly twice. Getting my books signed by her, Joseph Goodman, Doug Kovacs. I know, Dan, you have a million things you got signed, but me...
I sure do.
I've never had anything signed before, so that was kind of a highlight for me.
Just a real quick aside, Dan, thank you for not bringing up a single time that I was just cutting in line. Making you stand there in line and wait, and then I would show up right at the end and cut in line, and no one raised their voice or like objected to the fact that you were there.
You're like a literal ogre or a hill giant, dude. Who the hell's gonna raise their fucking voice to you?
He met a guy who was bigger than him at con.
Yes, he did. Luke Gygax's friend who used to play for the Seahawks and the Raiders.
Oh yeah,
fucking giant.
I was taller than him, but that man was bigger than me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He could also Big Show was there, man. He's bigger than you.
I know. Yeah, but I didn't meet him.
I know.
Yep. Next year, I'm going to be hunting him next year.
Yeah.
Well, based on the pictures of him, Vince Vaughn, and Tom Morello, they were clearly playing down in one of the lower level rooms because his head was scraping the ceiling when he was standing up.
Yep, they're playing some pirate Borg. So as for my favorite game moments, and mind you, I had a great time in more or less all the games that we played, but Chris, you know, I got to tell this story. So we got into a game of pirate Borg, the four of us, and I was playing a gunner. I don't remember the specific name of the class, but I literally was built to just shoot things. That's all the character cared about.
Buccaneer.
Buccaneer. So his whole background and everything that I rolled up randomly, he just liked to shoot things. And there was no combat for 2+ hours of this adventure. Mind you, I'm still having a great time. I was having fun either way.
Oh, yeah.
If I didn't shoot anything, that would have been fine, too. But for anyone who wasn't familiar with it, Pirate Borg, there's a lot of undead in the game, and if you kill the undead, you can do some stuff to it and turn their bones into a drug called ash. And ash in-game has random effects. You don't really know what you're going to get when you take it. Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and decided that my character was going to be an ash addict.
Hell yes.
So one of the characters got killed in our group. I looted his body for his ash. I traded Chris a magic item for his ash. So by the point we get to the end of the session and the combat's breaking out, I've got a stockpile of this stuff. And my whole goal was to, as soon as combat breaks out, snort ash and start fucking things up. That's not exactly what happened.
How did that go again?
That is not exactly how that went down. I snort some ash, and immediately the DM tells me that you think you're a crocodile. Or no, that you are a crocodile. That was his exact words. Then he explains, you're hallucinating that you're a crocodile. So what is it that crocodiles do? They attack and eat things. And unfortunately, when my turn came up in combat, Chris was the closest target. And I rolled a pretty good attack, and you failed. You crit failed your defense roll, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up dealing basically double damage and killed your character in our first pirate board game.
But the best part of it, though.
Okay, what's your best part of it?
The best part of it, though, was clearly whenever Jade's character took the ash, the DM looks at him and says, okay, you see yourself shape-changing into this massive crocodile, and the only thing you want to do is bite everything around here and just give it a death roll. And the DM promptly turns to the rest of us and said, you definitely just see him looking like himself after shorting some ash, and then he attacks this guy.
Yeah, that's basically how it went down. So what was your best part of it?
The best part for me was I was having a great, fantastic time at the game, and then you fucking murdered me. And, like, it took me out. Like, I couldn't
focus.
I hated every moment from that point forward. Because, like,
that was the end of the fight. That was the end of the game.
I know. No, I was having a great time, and he ruined it. It's his fault.
Okay,
the random dice roll ruined it. And actually, correction as to how you died there, buddy. In Pyreborg, you roll your defense. Failed. You killed yourself. Yep. He didn't kill you. Killed yourself.
let's be completely honest, Chris. You were pulled out of it and disgruntled because you had a plan, didn't you?
Actually, no. My guy had no in combat abilities at all.
No, but I thought you had a plan to betray us or something. I remember you talking about this.
Yes, the guy when I rolled up my guy. And we can get more into when we talk about Pirate Borg like next week or something. But one of the key traits for my guy is that he will betray everybody.
Okay. So if it had been a campaign at some point, you would have.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I was the only thing I could do, because I had no weapons, no offensive capabilities at all, would be just to charm my way and like, oh, yeah, sacrifice all these fuckers and, you know, have a great day. So I didn't actually have a plan to get anybody. I was just kind of like waiting for the moment. But yeah,
got it.
So
yeah, that was my best points of GaryCon. Played some Mothership, played a lot of Shadow Dark, which most of us did. I really loved Mothership. I'm sure Christian will want to talk about that some. So
Christian, your turn.
Okay. I also played some Mothership. That game was a blast. It definitely, I was already inclined. I'd heard a lot of great things about Mothership. I had looked at the rules online ahead of time, so I was already pretty sure I was in. But playing that game of it just sold me on the system hard. We had a great DM, it is a fantastic system for any sort of horror tinged sci-fi thing. So that was definitely one of the highlights of that, was playing that, because it is just a game where whatever you think can go wrong will go wrong even worse, and where you can try to fight, but you can definitely see that combat is not the right answer almost all of the time.
Yeah, we struggled with combat in that game,
which is the purpose. Like, you're not, that's kind of the point. Even where we were like, we had these, basically the freaking warthogs from Halo or whatever, where they have, you know, big Jeep, all terrain Jeeps with big guns on the back. And even on those big guns, like, we were barely doing anything to these like big bug things that were hunting us, which was the kind of the signal of, you're not really supposed to fight these things. You should be running.
Yeah.
It and seems that, like a that, lot
that,
of them...
that seemed very thematic for all the OSR style games that we played all weekend. Like, really, only 5e D&D, you're the big damn heroes that are, you know, bullets are bouncing off of you, and you know you're gonna win the day because you've got more magic weapons and cool abilities than the other guy, and you're gonna defeat that dragon. Like, in any of these other games that we played over the weekend, like, if I saw a dragon, I'm fucking running the other way.
I ran a lot all weekend.
Yeah, all of the... just because there's a fundamental difference in style in that D&D 5e says that encounters should be balanced for the level of the party, and so because every encounter should be solvable with combat, whereas old school gaming says encounters should make sense for the world, and there's no worry about whether it's balance or whether the character should be able to fight those things or not. It's more of, if you encounter something that you can't fight, that's a hint. That's telling you, you are not supposed to fight right here. Like, if you run into a dragon as first, even in old school D&D, in AD&D, when you ran into a dragon and you're low level, you weren't like, oh, well, this has got to be we got to be able to win this fight. There's got to be something here. Like, no, that was a hint of you should not be fighting. You should either be running or negotiating or doing something else, or, you know, finding a way, like a weak point in the roof where you can collapse the ceiling. You'd be doing anything other than engaging in direct combat.
Yeah, it's right. It really is a strange thing. Like, you kind of want to pinpoint it to MMOs as the change and when that happened mentally for players, but it's not. It's much earlier than that. And honestly, I think it's Final Fantasy, Dragon Warrior, the beginnings of role-playing games for video games back in the Super Nintendo, Nintendo era.
No.
Where I don't think it's that, because you get to a point where you're fighting somebody and you're like, oh shit, I can't beat this guy. Oh, I'm gonna go grind some levels for a little bit and come back with some better gear, and then I'll be able to beat it. Like, you can grind and game your way out of a situation. So, like, for World of Warcraft, it just cemented it. Where, like, okay, I'm running in Hillsbrad. Okay, cool. What's over here? Oh, the scenery changed. Oh my god, that bear has a skull in it. What's going to happen to me? And then, like, you run, and you know you can't. So then you have to come back much later when you're a higher level and everything.
Yeah, so I think even those old Final Fantasy games and stuff existed alongside of old school D&D and stuff.
Yeah,
but wasn't really the influence. But
adults already had their ideas that as a kid, I wasn't playing D&D. And as a kid, a lot of people weren't playing D&D. Satanic Panic was taking over. But I could play Final Fantasy. I couldn't play D&D. Even though it's the exact same fucking thing, you know? And in one game, I could grind out new more levels to beat the Earth Temple, but in D&D, you really can't.
It really started when they moved, when you moved from second edition D&D to 3.0, 3.0 became much more of a tactical fighting game than
that's when it changed.
It's when you decided you had to define all the rules instead of some of the rules just being kind of implied and encouraging you to make sense of things or what feels realistic in the situation.
Yeah. The third edition, however, it wasn't like it is with fourth and fifth, because third edition, while you could become incredibly fucking powerful, there was always dangerous shit. It was very easy to still die in third edition.
But drive into those rules is what kind of started that thing, is that because it started to define rules for everything, it moved it in that direction.
Yeah.
And that's why with all these systems now, we're seeing the shift back to the older style, because players are wanting that again. That's why we have Shadowdark and Pyroborg and Mothership and all these systems that are now kind of breaking free. And like, I have people coming to me asking me about Shadowdark who've only played 5e, you know, who kind of want that experience now. And I think just the developers are answering that call, essentially. And that's why when we played games all weekend, it was all, you know, you really don't know if you're going to beat this. I think the only game that we had that was tactical was Castles and Crusades. Everything else was that, you know, you're not supposed to be here. Don't fight these things. Find another solution.
Yeah, every game that we played was Runaway. But let's get back to Christian. He was going through his stuff that he wanted to
talk about. But I wanted to rant.
Yeah. I noticed. So, yeah, Mothership was definitely a highlight for me. And that's definitely a system I'm going to buy, because I had an absolute blast playing it. I could definitely see myself playing it and running it, whether for campaigns or one-shots. It was a lot of fun. So, highlight for me. I enjoyed meeting Kelsey and getting to talk to her and some of the other Shadowdark people. Michael from Night Noon Games and the other kind of part-time employee of Shadowdark, got to talk to him a little bit. He was real cool. He's got his Kickstarter that I backed for monsters for Shadow Dark and how to create monsters and convert them from other systems. So that was neat to get to talk to him for a minute. I got awesome coffee. I have to put that out. It was really good. It was good.
Was it?
I want to hear more about the coffee. What coffee did you buy? What was the people that bought the coffee?
So the coffee was from Smuggler's Coffee is the company, I think.
Yep.
And the two ones I bought were ones that you can't order from their website, that they only kind of do in-house and periodically because it's barrel-aged coffee.
Yeah, and you can find them online at just smugglerscoffee.com.
Yeah. So. And I will, it was good enough. I will order more coffee from them. It was very good. I was quite pleased.
What with coffee them. Have you had brewed from them?
So and I
how,
had.
How did it make you feel?
it was brilliant. I had very good coffee, great flavor, very robust. Which is something I like because I drink my coffee black, so the flavor is very important. I had Coffee for Dragons, which is a bourbon barrel-aged coffee. And that was excellent. And then I had Coffee of Autumn Twilight, which is Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Dragonlance-themed coffee. It's also barrel-aged, though it's not bourbon barrels. It's oak barrels that have, I think they've aged sherry in them, and then maple syrup, and then finally the coffee.
Oh my.
So that was definitely nice. It was still rich and dark, as you get from anything that you age. Had a lot of the like kind of vanilla oaky flavors, but also a few sweet notes, but not overly sweet, which is very important for me because I'm very sensitive to sweet.
Aww.
So excellent coffee. Would highly recommend Smuggler's Coffee. They do a good job. Very happy with that. Our Shadow Dark game was great. The one that we all got to play in along with John, Dan's brother, was great. Yep. It was just a great example of an old school game where
we crushed it too.
We did the right things. We knew, like, I made the call, like, as soon as I realized that, like, you know, that crocodile grabbed John and then somebody hit it, it healed immediately. And I knew, okay, we're not supposed to fight this thing. Like, this is the thing.
I think I hit it for like, I mean, we were level three characters, right?
Level four.
I had a great axe. I rolled max damage on that great axe hit. And I had like a +9 to damage or some shit like that because I was an orc and shit.
You were an orc and a fighter, which is a potent combination.
And I did like over 20 damage to it. And then it healed up immediately. And I'm like, I'm fucked.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was the exact kind of, and we did that thing when I called. I said, "Okay, we gotta go. We can't fight this." I knew there that like fighting that was not the option, and he even confirmed later that that's the point where a lot of people start losing characters because people that come from 5th edition just think, "Oh, well, we just got to keep hitting it enough. Surely enough, we'll kill it, right?"
Yeah, I was thinking if we hit it with enough magic items, it would be fine, but we only had two.
We didn't have enough magic.
Yeah, we didn't have like, any.
We had
whatever
we had
magic I had could them, do like a D4 or something.
Both of them were daggers.
Yeah, I had a magic dagger to start out, and then we found the magic dagger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had dagger that was just not gonna do enough.
And I do have to call out Dan, you calling out the crocodilian. Yeah, and then setting the tone for the entire weekend.
You're stealing my thunder.
All right.
So that was Shadow Dark was a lot of fun. I had it was Pirate Borg was great. I'm definitely sold on that system. I had bought the rule book ahead of time because I had found one that had like the back cover had been damaged a little bit, so I found it for like almost half price. So I bought it. I will definitely buy more of their stuff after that. It was a blast to play. Great system, super rules light.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was not able to get Pirate Borg while I was there because I'd already dropped a couple $100 at Goodman Games. But yeah, just saying.
Highly recommend it. Definitely a good example of having taken the Borg system and done it right. And then we played Castle and Crusades on Sunday, which was interesting. I like it overall. I think it definitely feels more. A little more modern D&D, like you're a little more sturdy, a little more survivable in fights. It's a weird mix of like second edition and third edition.
Yeah, yeah.
I think would be the way.
Surprise me, because I think that's kind of the intent of it. And when I opened up the book and saw that Jim Ward was one of the designers, like, oh, well, that checks out.
Yeah.
And I think I would have been really excited about it if this was 2005 and not 2025.
No shade to the Troller games, folks. It was enjoyable to play. I don't know that it's one that I will run or pick up regularly, but it was a good time to play. I would definitely play one shots and stuff of it.
Yeah, I would play it again.
If somebody else was running it. I just don't think it's one that I'm like, I'm going to pick up and I'm going to run this.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't think so either.
That's interesting. While I was there, I picked up the Hackmaster handbook from Kinzer and Company because I've been wanting it for several years now. And after kind of flipping through there, I've been telling everybody, basically, if first edition and third edition had a baby, that's what it would be. It's just very, it has the old school mindset to the game and the setting and the characters and everything, but it still has a lot of the number crunchiness and things that you would find in third, which kind of sounds like Castles and Crusades. So
Castles and Crusades does a decent job. Like, they don't add any skills, which I was happy to see. They do have a little bit of thing where they have like you have a prime attribute, or you have a couple of prime attributes, one of which is determined for you by your class, and then you get to pick the other one. And then checks with your prime attribute are, it kind of has the Pyroborg thing where, like, you're looking for a specific DC most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's your prime attribute, it's a 12. If it's not your prime attribute, it's an 18. So things that you're so good at are easier for
but
you.
It might be really hard.
Yeah. Things that you're not good at, you can still do and you can still try, but it's going to be more difficult for you. So it was fun. But those were my highlights. I had a lot of fun with Pirate Borg, with Shadow Dark, and Mothership for sure. And it was great to get to meet and talk to Kelsey, Michael from Night Noon, and then the brief time we got to talk to Luke and Tyler Stratton from Pirate Borg was good. I love that they're both still there and very engaged. Like, even though Chris is over there bitching, like he was like Tyler was over there trying to engage with him and kind of explaining it, and like was very engaged with trying to, like, hey, I want to understand why you didn't like this, but I want to try to explain to you how this game goes. So definitely was, yeah, good to meet those guys.
Yeah.
Don't embarrass us anymore, Chris.
Oh, no.
Embarrassing me.
But all right, that's my piece. I'll let Dan go.
Okay. If you're still listening to the podcast, even though we're over an hour now, well, here's my walkthrough of the con. So let me just begin with the highlight. Waple's already tried to steal my thunder a little bit, so we go into this I think it was called Raiders of the Hidden Temple. And we go into this temple in the middle of the jungle or something, and we're immediately confronted by a bunch of weird, you know, draconic looking writing. And I'm the only one in the party that I think actually had draconic as a language, because I'm a kobold, and I'm like, oh sure, I'll make it. He's like, yeah, just make a roll against your intelligence and tell me what you get. And I'm like, that would be a natural one. So he's like, yeah, you have absolutely no idea what it says. I'm like, it's a kobold voice. Yeah, you know, it's like a weird dialect of some sort of snake, maybe a crocodilian. I'm not really sure. Little do we know, just inside in a black pool is an albino vampiric crocodile that was just about to grab my brother's character in its deadly jaws and suck away his toughness and his constitution or toughness and
con.
And,
con, yeah.
And I'm like, so yeah, just like Christian said, like as soon as the crocodile appeared, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? It's like, I told you it was crocodilian! And we, you know, grab a crowbar and try to get its leg out of the damn thing's mouth, and we, you know, try to retreat to go find someplace else to recuperate and run into some snake people. It was a whole thing, but that was definitely the highlight, and that's just because I, as you may well know, roll shittily all the time, and normally it's just like, oh, you didn't succeed, but instead went with it and it seemed to turn out in my favor because I predicted the future.
Not only did you predict the future, but then the pirate
the
board
game.
Yeah,
you think you're a crocodile, and all of us like look at each other like, "Are you fucking kidding me right now?"
Yep.
And then I'm in the Castle Crusades. It's like, are there crocodiles out here in the Badlands? I'm afraid of crocodiles.
You had good reason to fear crocodiles.
So yeah, that was definitely my highlight. But just to piggyback on what everyone else already said here, I won't spend too much time on it. Wednesday night, we got to go to Shadowdark, held a pizza party. The Arcane Library held a pizza party, and then had a "What's New in Shadowdark" and everything you want to know with Kelsey Dion. And we got to listen to her just, you know, talk about her game for like an hour, which was really cool before the con had officially even started. But my Thursday was my old school D&D game, because I managed to get in to a Oriental Adventures game, AD&D, being run by the writer of Oriental Adventures, one Zeb Cook, who you might be familiar with if you know anything about D&D, because he wrote The Slave Fits the Undercity, The Isle of Dread, Ruins of Venture, aka Pool of Radiance, The Adventures of Indiana Jones, Conan the RPG, all of the character stuff for Forgotten Realms. He also wrote for the original Baldur's Gate video game. For Christian, he wrote the Planescape campaign setting.
Yes,
wrote a bunch
did.
Of player's handbooks for Dragonlance. After he stopped writing for D&D and RPGs, he went on to write for City of Villains and the Elder Scrolls Online. So, kind of a big fucking deal. And he was super nice and ran a great game. And I was kind of hesitant, like, you know, this is like probably a nearly 80-year-old man running an Oriental Adventures game. In you know the year that we live in, that, you know, but he was quite respectful. There was nobody was tried to pull anything with like an Asian accent, being a white dude or anything like that. It was fine, and like we discovered a 45-year-old typo in Oriental Adventures where they basically just copy pasted over Cone of Cold, and we end up like my brother ended up failing like 3 survival checks to try to find where we needed to go in this snowstorm up a mountain, and we end up in a fox spirit's hut, and most of the party gets charmed, and the wizard gets dominated to basically like he will fight anyone to the death to if they try to take him out of there. So we try to take him out of there because we don't know that, and he's like, okay, I have an ability that allows me to maximize one spell. I use my best spell, like cast Cone of Cold at the party. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And, like, you know, somebody pulls out the AD&D PHB, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, we all take 64 points of damage, or I don't know, I think it's 45 points of damage. And I'm like, well, that's where everybody's dead except for the fighter. Because, of course, it's AD&D, you're dead at zero. Then, like, so another guy pulls out his Oriental Adventures book that he happened to have on him, and he looks at it, he's like, actually, it says a D4 plus 1 per level. And everyone's like, no, it's definitely that, because that's what it is in AD&D PHB. And then Zeb looks at it like, no, it's a typo. You only do 14 points of damage, or 13 points of damage. And I'm like, oh, I fucking survived that. Okay, thank God. So we promptly left the guy there and then finished the adventure, which we all had to write a haiku because the prince we were accompanying to this temple to, you know, have a flowery spring for the kingdom for the next 12 years, was not a good writer. So we all ended up having to write a haiku, and they used mine for the coming of the spring for the kingdom.
Nice.
I thought was great.
Yep. So saved by a 50-year-old typo.
Right. And the second game I played on Thursday was it was supposed to be which I just I love the name, but The Hamlet of Omelette, The Assault on the Apple Barn, by Heidi Gygax and her husband Eric. But when we got there, Chris was in this game with me, and they're like, okay, we're really sorry, we didn't actually manage to finish writing the module, but we got something else. So they pulled out a module that they ran at EggCon last year, which nobody in the group had played at EggCon. And they whip out some randomly generated characters from somebody else's game, and everyone just kind of grabbed a character. It was, I think, most... Chris, was it mostly fighters? Like, I think there were 4 fighters in the party.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
And we were talking, like, AD&D, first edition AD&D with, like, no Unearthed Arcana, so... I mistakenly thought that they had weapon specialization. They did not. They was just, you know, basic-ass first edition fighters.
Yep.
And so of some random magic items, like one guy had a net of entanglement that, you know, we had to look up what the hell it did, because like we made an assumption and then it wasn't right. And then we're like, I think it actually does that. It's like, oh shit, got to completely change it because it does not work the way it does in later editions. And I had a staff of curing, which was ridiculous. Ridiculous magic item for a fourth level cleric, because I had like two cure light wound spells, and that's all I had as far as like curing goes. But it was a funny adventure called The Encounter of Goblin Gulch. Bunch of people who had never played a first edition D&D before, and you know, some old veterans and grognards as well. And we managed to get through it mostly, except like we clearly had a thing that we had to get, which was like a dragon's egg or something at the end of it. And like, there's these people in the party that just like, oh, I'm gonna go check for more loot over here. I'm like, this isn't your home game. There's an adventure that we have a set objective that if we don't find it, the kingdom will be destroyed by a red dragon whose egg was stolen. And of course, it's AT&T first edition, so traps are ridiculous. Chris, was it some dwarf that went to go open a door and we didn't have a rogue in the party, or he's like, oh, I don't need the rogue to check for traps because he kept failing anyway?
Yeah.
Again, first edition D&D, your fourth level rogue, he's got like a 40% chance to detect traps or something like that, which is 40% better than everybody else, though. Yeah. And he gets fucking impaled by spears. And everyone's like, oh, cleric, can you help him? Like, nah, not until third edition.
Yeah, that fucker dead.
He's fucking dead.
The best part about that trap was he basically opened up this giant metal door, and then spears shot out from the door, and then spikes shot up from below, and then spikes came down from the ceiling.
Oh my god.
So it was like 10 attacks. And then each of those attacks had a subsequent save for the poison as well.
No, so it wasn't poison. I think save or get impaled. Like one of them.
That's what it was. Yeah, get impaled.
Yeah. But it was hilarious. And I'm just like, no, we got to keep going, guys. But it was a fun adventure. Heidi and her husband Eric are lovely people. Waples and I went by their booth afterwards, and I bought a couple of their modules. She's a sweet retired grandma. We got to see her grandchildren come in there, get dropped off by her son. I bought three of their modules: the Curse of Candlelight Manor dungeon module, GG1 Till Death Do Us Part, Tomb, and the Tomb of the Dundle Chief, which is all for 5e first edition and Castles and Crusades.
I'm sure you can find all that stuff online at Gax Works, which is GA.
Gax Works is Luke. Gax Land is Heidi and Eric's.
Really? Okay. Yep. I thought I could have sworn they had the banner behind them was Gax Works, but all right.
Yep. Gax Land is Eric and Heidi, and Gax Works is Luke. And they run a separate convention in honor of Gary, and that's called AgCon, and that's in the summer, and it's a smaller convention that's only been running for about 3 years.
Also in Lake Geneva, which unfortunately, yeah, I wish it was closer, but...
Right. and we already kind of talked about Shadow Dark on Friday. We also did a Shadow Dark funnel on Friday night. And that was fun because Waples decided that he was going to be four kobolds in a trench coat.
I forgot about that.
Just fucking get as many people killed as he possibly could, which he promptly got my character killed. By just fucking around and doing shenanigans. It was a great time. We had, I think, 12 deaths between
19.
Waples. It was 19?
The party overall was 19.
Okay, so the Waples and this other guy, like, that was like basically being influenced by Waples being an idiot. I think Waples, you died 6 times. You ran out of kobolds, didn't you?
I ran out of... I had 7 kobolds, got killed. I was on my 8th kobold.
He started recycling
I thought there was one that was dressed like a kobold.
Yeah, I had a halfling that was covered in red paint with a kobold nose on, yeah. Just to spice it up.
We all had, you know, grabbed 4 characters, but some of us definitely ran through more than that.
Let me just say the reason why I did the kobold thing is when I was handed the stack of random characters, the first 5 were all kobolds.
Yeah,
I'm like, all right,
As far as the rest of the con, Saturday morning we got to go into Lake Geneva itself and go see, go to 330 Center Street, the birthplace of D&D. Hell yeah. And got a tour of it with Paul Stormberg, who's a local historian, and he does the When We Were Wizards podcast on Spotify.
Definitely listen to it. Follow. It's very worth
very
it.
Very good and very well researched. And we met the owner of 330 Center Street, who owns that house as well as the house next door. Which she rents out as a Airbnb. Yes, you heard that right. And people were allowed to play in Gary's basement during GaryCon because there were pictures of it on the GaryCon website afterwards. Anyways, the owner's very nice. Her name's Yolanda. Definitely, if you're in Lake Geneva, if you have the extra coin laying around, rent it out and game in Gary's basement. We got to see the sand table and the desk that he wrote D&D in. My God, that is a small office. Holy shit.
Yeah,
there might be some pictures of Waple sitting back there, and he like the entire like. There's definitely one of him standing in the archway of this dining room and like
bending over,
head hitting the ceiling.
Yeah, we'll definitely have pictures up on our Facebook when this podcast comes out. So go to facebook.com/grumpydungeonmasters and give it a look.
Of course, also on Saturday was Pirate Borg, Venom in the Veins. As Waples mentioned, I am planning on running a couple of one-shots, both for my online group and just for off-game Fridays of the regular D&D game I've had for the last 5 years now. So might start picking that up. I just picked up a couple of zine-style modules, which, by the way, when the hell did zines become so popular?
Last couple years.
Because 2018.
Like everything was like half the size of an 8.5 by 11 zine format. Like
A5 format. Yeah. And it's actually been a little more popular in the indie scene for a while. It's just now getting to being where people that are not on that wavelength are actually discovering them and seeing them.
Yep. I noticed a few years back with all the Goodman Games stuff. They love zines. They just put out tons of that stuff, or people who are putting out DCC stuff in zine form.
So speaking of zines again, at the end of Pirate Borg, one of the guys that was in the game with us, the guy with like the, it looks like a biker jacket, but if you look real closely, it's a bunch of gamer patches. And he handed each of us like two zine style modules. One's for 5e and one is for Shadow Dark. And I'm looking at his website right now. It's called Revivify Games. He's actually makes some nice stuff.
We'll have him.
If you guys haven't looked at him yet, I think the two that he gave us are what is it? In the Dead of Night, which night spelled with a K. It's a 5e adventure. And the other one was a Shadow Dark adventure. I don't recall the name of it though.
Yeah, I've
A Stinking Suspicion.
Yeah, yeah, I flipped through that one already.
Yeah. But yeah, it was. I thought that was great, and I definitely would encourage people that are getting writing labels to start doing some zine-style things to hand out at cons, because it's pretty cheap to produce and then hand out. And, of course, I think we've already mentioned it, but we got a private tour of the Lake Geneva Museum and got to walk through, with nobody else there, the exhibit of the Wizard of Lake Geneva.
Yeah.
That was great. Definitely make it worth your while to stop by the museum. Shout out to Sonia Ackwright, who is the administrator there, for letting us in there. Hopefully we'll have her on the podcast soon. And
I need to go back so I can take full museum time.
Yeah, and we had to cut you off a little early.
Yeah. You made better progress than I thought you would.
I was trying to be fast.
And I normally don't fanboy over meeting creators and authors. Mostly because, like, I guess I'm used to Dragon Con, where you've got to pay to get autographs for, like, everything and everybody. I think the last autograph I got from Dragon Con was Monty Cook. And I had him autograph my Rollmaster Companion 7.
Fuck yeah.
21-year-old creator. And instead of Numenera, which was his most recent game at the time. Like, you know, I talked to him about that, and, like, that was the last time. And before that, it was, like, probably 20 years later, and I got an autograph from Larry Elmore when I went by his booth and bought, like, some cards that he had produced, because I was, like, a poor-ass, you know, college student, couldn't really afford anything else. But, like, every hour of every day, there was a table in the dealer's hall at GaryCon that had a very well-known creator that was signing autographs. And there was maybe up to maximum 100 people in line at any given time. And until finally I'm in line for getting Errol fucking Otis's autograph, you could get as many things as you happen to have on you signed. Except some shithead decided to show up, clearly eBaying whatever he's getting signed, with a suitcase for every single creator that was there.
Yeah, fuck
and
that
then
guy.
They changed it to maximum of two. So the four things I was getting signed, one for me, and then three for other people, I could only get the one for me and one for one other person signed, which kind of sucked.
That actually happened when I was in line for you for Margaret Weiss and Jeff Easley. Or Larry Elmore, rather. Yeah. Larry Elmore. But almost right before, there was a couple people in front of me. This guy was carrying, like, in two arms, this giant cardboard box full of stuff. And, like, he brought out, like, multiple stacks of the same book. So you knew this is a guy reselling stuff.
This isn't a guy putting something on a shelf for a shadow box. This is a guy that is just when he brings shit on eBay.
Yeah, when he's getting a stack of, like, here's eight copies of Dragons of Autumn Twilight for you to sign. Like, those aren't his or for him. Like, he's getting that crap to sell.
Yeah, if you get two copies, maybe one's yours and one's for a friend. But if you're bringing out eight, no, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was very happy to be able to get in line and talk to these people. Like, some of these people, like, didn't have that many people in line. Like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but Jim Zub, who's the creator of the new Conan the Barbarian comic book series, he did a lot of the D&D comic book series about 5 or 6 years ago. It's done a number of different things, but he was just shooting the shit and just seemed like happy as hell just to be there. And he was just sketching things. I think we posted something of like what was the thing called? The metal Modron or whatever it's called, Christian?
Yeah. Modron, yeah.
Yeah. He was just sketching that out in front of me. I didn't get to meet Margaret Weiss because I was in a game at the time, but Christian got me an autograph. I met Jeff Grubb, and he was super nice and just wanted to shoot the shit and talk. Like, the books I put in front of him, he's like, oh, this takes me back. This is one I wrote with Ed. Because I put in front of him, like, the original Guide to Forgotten Realms. Like, it was just split between Jeff Grubb and Ed Greenwood. And, you know, invited him on the podcast. Hopefully he comes. You know, he handed something to me and was like, hey, if you want to come on my podcast, you know, come to this thing. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Shit.
You know, and, you know, Errol Otis was very nice, too. He seemed very apologetic that I couldn't sign the extra stuff that I had. And I'm like, yeah, so one person has to ruin it for everybody. Luke Gygax, whom we met in the hallway, again, with his very large ex-football player friend who writes for Warhammer?
Yes.
I think that's what he writes for.
5th edition or 7th edition? It was a much earlier edition.
Yeah.
What was his name? I can't remember.
I can't recall. I mean, look up for player that plays for played for the Raiders and the Seahawks, is what I heard. But dude was massive. But Luke was awesome. Waples had met him at opening ceremonies, essentially, because Luke, I guess, at the beginning of every day, draws from the deck of many things, or the deck of Gygax. And, of course, Waples drew the void and had his money stolen from him by Luke Gygax to donate to Extra Life Charity. So, good on you for your donation there. Could have been worse, Waples. Could have been worse.
Yeah, so, real quick on that, like, the one lady was like, do I have to give you all my wallet, or I can just give you some? And she was complaining. I just pulled out my wallet and just handed it straight to
her. But your money had somehow already fallen out of it because somebody else handed it to you.
Well, some guy basically ran up to me and was like, hey, man, I found your money clip back there. Here's all your money. And he had a wad of like tens and twenties as well. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, thanks, man. So I took that out. And Luke grabbed, I think, a 20 or a 5 out of my wallet. But I had hundreds of cash in there because I was going to spend it on the floor.
And you did.
And I did.
They ended up raising $80,000 or $85,000
at the auction
for the chair.
Yeah.
Well,
wow,
that's incredible.
That's a lot. Yeah.
But anyway, like other autographs, I ended up getting Ed Greenwood. Waples got that for me, and apparently signed a Spellfire card for me that had the worst depiction that he ever saw of Elminster on it.
Mm-hmm.
And told Waples about it. Got to meet Rose Estes, who, if you guys aren't familiar, wrote the Endless Quest novels for D&D, but a lot of other books as well. And apparently a couple of her Endless Quest books spent more time on the New York Times bestseller list. Because I heard this on the When We Were Wizards podcast, because Paul Stormberg interviews her. Apparently it was on the bestseller list the longest of any book, and held that title for about 20 years until frickin' Harry Potter beat her out.
Huh.
Like, I mean, as a fantasy novel. Like,
if you're going to get the throne, getting the throne by Harry Potter is top-notch.
Right?
Yeah.
Of course, we got to meet Kelsey Dion, which is great. A very personalized signature in my Shadow Dark book. Luke Stratton was awesome, too. That guy's a beast, too. Like, he's an incredible writer, but also just, like, his graphic artistry is just incredible. It's off the chain. If you haven't seen his work, I think it's Limithron is his Patreon. You want to take a look at it?
Yeah, his art is phenomenal.
It absolutely is. And it's not just like maps and D&D-ish fantasy stuff. It's just like the colors that he uses, and just he conveys a message with the least amount of work.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated to be incredible.
His art is what sold me on the game, actually, as I saw the art for it, and I just loved the art, and so I wanted to know more.
Nice.
All right, so Waples, you have anything to add?
I have quite a bit. Do you want to keep going, or do you want to save this for next week?
We're definitely well over an hour at this point. Yeah. Let's save it for next week.
Let's save it for next week.
Because I got Gary Comfort 2 and deep dive into Pirate Borg.
And the free 5e thing. We'll save it for next week.
Yeah, so we got a lot more about Gary Con. So yeah, I'll pick it up next week. And you heard a lot of my thoughts ahead of time at the beginning of the podcast, but I have some specific stuff I want to go over, and some great people that I talked to.
Yeah, you did actually get a chance to meet the man, the myth, the legend, Ed Greenwood. So we want to hear all about that for sure.
Yeah, I got a lot to talk about that. It's going to be more. So definitely next week. We'll see you then.
All right, we're out of here. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.